Hello and welcome to this rapid fire edition of the Raw Rugby Podcast, where we talk all the team news. And this week it's round eight. And joining me, Christy Doran, is my boss at the Raw, Tony Harper. Harps, how are you?
Oh, g'day. It's been a long day, actually, Christy. Always fun and games in the sports world, isn't it? So, yes, here we go again. Looking forward to another, quieter round, I guess, after last week. Although it certainly didn't turn out to be a quiet round for those who were on deck during those games, was it?
Well, it's dragged on, hasn't it? The judiciary handing down some suspensions today, which is Wednesday evening that we're recording this podcast, which will come out on Thursday evening. And a couple of surprise, findings from the Sansa judiciary. Harps, talk us through that, what occurred last week, Friday night, between the Drua and the Melbourne Rebels.
Well, we've all seen, I mean, if we've got an interest, we've all seen the vision, and it was quite shocking, especially the vision of Frank Lomani going the elbow on the top of Josh Canham's head, and the images afterwards of Canham with his headband, you know, covered in claret. And, you know, I guess it then kind of exploded into allegations of racism as he took his chair. There was obviously quite heated in that stadium at that time. Then his teammate, and apologies to his family for my pronunciation here, but Joan Corowa-Duadua, who shaped and glanced Alex Matthew with a headbutt. So Lomani at the judiciary has received a 6-week suspension. His teammate has received a 2-week suspension. Now, Lomani's was marked from 10 weeks down to 6. And I think this is the one that's causing most consternation, because a lot of people, I guess, the charges come out, and as they do every week, they take some weeks off for pleading guilty, but also then for certain mitigating factors. And I think it's really hard for a lot of rugby fans, to stomach what these mitigating factors could be when you can clearly see him launch his elbow down into the guy's head and have such an impact on it. I think there was, I'm going to say that there was general shock from a lot of fans that 6 weeks is the end result there. But I know you possibly have a different thought on that. I mean, our discussions, you mentioned you thought that maybe it was a fair result in the end. I kind of want to put that to you and ask what your thinking is there, and why you feel that way.
Well, we've got to put it in the context of I'm going to call him Joan, but the tight head prop of the Fiji Drua who gets 2 weeks. That's the one that I get the most surprised by. So that's 6 weeks down to 3 weeks, down to 2 weeks, because it was regarded as not having a huge amount of force and a glancing blow. Alex Murphy didn't cop an injury, didn't really, you know, there was no blood, there was no real grazes either from it. So that to me, though, is still about as you can get. A headbutt, it may have been towards the chest, but you can't do it. And they're terrible images for anyone watching the game, and mothers and parents and fathers thinking about their children going into playing rugby. The Frank Lomani one, to answer your question, look, 10 weeks down to 6 weeks, that's a big suspension. 10 weeks would have been even bigger, would have ruled him out of the entire season, unless they perhaps made the final, the Drua. 6 weeks is still a big blow. And we've seen right across Super Rugby for the 30 years that it's, you know, almost 30 years that it's been played, the competition, but especially in the last decade, it's a wheel of fortune. It's a lucky dip what you come out with, and that perhaps is why people are blowing up. I still think 6 weeks is a long one, and I know I've spoken and I've heard other former Wallabies say, look, halfbacks will always try to get rid of the clean out player, and they get frustrated because they're trying to play the ball, and generally speaking, they'll use their wrist or perhaps part of their arm, but they're not going to elbow him at the back of the head. And I know that people have been talking about UFC, and one of the few things that's outlawed in that is elbows to the back of the head, because it's about as bad as it can get. I'm not trying to downplay that, but I think at the same time, it's not like a headbutt where you're staring the man down, looking at him, and then reacting there. This is more caught up in the moment. And I think 6 weeks is still a reasonable suspension where it was so plainly clear that it's unacceptable.
My issue, I guess, is with this other relevant mitigating factors. And I think if they were prepared, and I know, as you mentioned, that this is quite normal for them to not go into detail here, but I think a bit of transparency around that to make it clear where they've come up with this, how they've found this reduction, I think people might be able to swallow it a little better. You talk about, you know, what about the kiddies? I think the mums and dads and coaches are going to just be just as disgusted at seeing someone stand there with a completely helpless player underneath them and to do what that guy did. But
there's lessons to be learnt, isn't there? And I think Super Rugby really does need to start looking at itself in the mirror and going, well, why aren't we being more transparent? Where rugby's been one of the sports that's tried to take a really proactive, strong stance regarding concussion. Now, we know Josh Canham's missing this weekend against the Highlanders. That's a big blow. He's a second rower on the rise and he's definitely got Wallabies aspirations. He's missing the game as a result of the – I'm not sure how many stitches are there, but you know, some people are saying upwards of 20. That's bad. You look at rugby league, the NRL, they seem to be much more transparent with their judiciary process. It's pretty open. You can see it. I've never, ever seen anyone actually have access to footage or be able to attend it. It's all done on Zoom and it has been done online for 10 years I know of and probably before that longer. And this comes back to SANZA, Super Rugby, the governing body that runs the tournament, always having this veil of secrecy behind it. And that is an issue. And it's not just been a recent thing. It's all matters that you never see. And I think people get frustrated at the lack of accountability that comes from it. And in this case, the lack of transparency. So that's something I can totally appreciate.
I think it's probably good to leave it there. Obviously, in between us speaking and the podcast coming out, there might be some action on the other unsavoury incident that came out of the game, but I think we can probably leave that one until SANZA does get their act together on that investigation and we get some closure on that. So maybe we, it's meant to be a quick rapid-fire pod with only four games. Should we dive into what those games look like?
Yeah, good point, Harps. Thanks for keeping me on track here. But, yep, the first game of four this weekend, Moana Pacifica up against the Queensland Reds. Moana Pacifica, heavy outsiders, and that's – they've only won two games, but at the same time, the Queensland Reds are coming off the back of consecutive defeats to the Brumbies and the Western Force.
Yeah, the Reds are paying $1.14 to Moana Pacifica's $5.75 in this one as they go across to, and I'm going to attempt to keep going with the high wire act here and pronounce the venue as Whangarei in New Zealand, which is relevant because the rookie number 10 for the Moana Pacifica team is actually the first 15 captain of the local school there. He comes in, his name is Aaron Craig. But obviously more interest for us, at least on the red side, and their number 10 machinations. Harry McLaughlin Phillips is back in that jersey with Tom Liner left out altogether with Lawson Crichton coming onto the bench because of his better utility qualities. I wanted to get your opinion on whether this is a good thing to freshen up Tom Liner, whether we're maybe underplaying him in a season where we really want to be getting some decent. You know, and this is a game where perhaps he has a bit more time and a bit more ability to influence things. Like, do you think they're making the right decision?
Okay, first thing I'll pull you up, Aaron Craig, the lock, not the number 10. Willem Havili is the number 10 for Moana, but that's fine. Know what you were talking about there. But, yeah, it's a reasonable question and it's back-to-back weeks in terms of the Reds with Harry McLaughlin Phillips missing out last week or 2 weeks ago for their loss 20-19 against the Brumbies, and they – had Lawson Crichton on the bench rather than McLaughlin Phillips, who's probably more of a 10 but can play at inside centre as opposed to Lawson Crichton, who covers multiple positions in that back line. And I think they've done that again. They're going Lawson Crichton can play more, cover more positions on the bench and therefore more versatile. McLachlan Phillips, the thing that he's probably got over Tom Lynor at the moment is maybe more physicality. And one thing that Les Kiss has been talking about this week is that these are big bodies that come really hard, that they try to whack oppositions, and that's Moana Pacifica. They don't always stick. They don't always get points. They don't always win games. But what they do do is play with a physical edge. And Tom Lynor, little Tom Lynor at the moment, maybe still has some more development to go there. So I don't mind the idea of McLachlan Phillips, more physical, more abrasive, and he's actually not put a step wrong thus far this season. I think it's probably a reasonable core. My question is more around Lawson Crichton. He was, I think, it's this harsh, it's brutal, but the reason why I think the Reds lost against the Brumbies was two fundamental errors from Crichton off the bench, kicking the ball long and then a fumble that he made in attack on the Brumbies 10-metre line. So I'd be going, hang on, I know that Lawson Crichton's a good guy, good for morale, well-liked, but Tom Lynor's a better player. It's as simple as that. Otherwise, Sule Vunivalu's coming on the right wing, Mac Ridley having the week off, Jordy Pitaya, Jock Campbell make up the rest of the back three for the Reds. And up front, it's pretty stable. There's no changes, a couple on the bench, though, with Alex Hodgman, the former All Blacks loose head prop, coming back after a few weeks with an injury. And Angus Blyth is going to come on the bench for Cormac Daly. So there's a fair bit of experience there. It's a pretty good-looking team. They've played a lot of rugby, but they do need to win. I think they will against Moana.
Okay, so next game up on that night, we've got the Waratahs at home against the Crusaders, 10th place against 11th place. The Tars actually beat them earlier this season, didn't they, in Super Round? I think it was 37-24. Do you see it happening again?
No, I don't. And the simple thing is, the Waratahs have got a couple of injuries, namely up front. They're still missing their hookers, Mahi Vanuvelanu, as well as Dave Parecki. But the big one just happened last weekend. Angus Bell out for the rest of the Super Rugby season. There's more clarification to come about how long he's actually out for. But, they're up against the Crusaders side that I'm going to name you the front rowers: George Bauer, Fletcher Newell, All Black, Joe Moody, All Black, Owen Franks, All Black. That's a serious amount of firepower up front. And the Tars have got a brand new loose head prop coming straight out of Shoot Shield. They haven't gone for Jack Barrett, the 19-year-old, this time, but they've plucked another Super Rugby rookie out of thin air.
That's right. A guy called Lewis Panini. He actually spent a lot of time over in Christchurch and played a bit of Mitre 10 Cup for Canterbury before coming to the Shoot Shield. I think he was with Eastwood, now maybe Eastern Suburbs. So he has a nickname, and the nickname is Doom, but I think they've missed a trick there, mate. Panini should probably be nicknamed the Italian Sanger, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, not bad from you. It's interesting, though. You've asked me, can the Tars win? And I don't think they can, but it also actually, we've skipped over probably the big headline, which is, we've buried the lead. And if I was writing that in my copy and bearing this, I don't think you'd be particularly happy. But the lead being Mark.
We're coming back to it.
Yeah, we're coming back to it. Mark Nwanganeetiwasi, he's been left out, dropped. Tristan Riley in. Riley actually hadn't done too much wrong in his few matches that he had played. But to come in for Mark Nwanganeetiwasi, who was in the top three last year on the John Eales medal standings, played most of the Wallabies matches last year, was the find of the spring tour in 2022 under Dave Rennie. It's a big blow, and I've got to say that I think a little bit of it has to do with what's next. Nwanganeetiwasi going to Sydney Roosters at the end of the year.
Have you actually noticed the drop-off in his in his levels that you could relate to that? Do you think that maybe there is like a distraction factor here, or, how are you kind of comparing his performances this season? Because I know a lot of raw commenters this season just aren't having him. Like every time the Waratahs lose, a big finger gets pointed at him for not being the man that's turning these fortunes around, that's not stepping up to where he perhaps should be. And a lot who are saying that, he shouldn't play for the Wallabies with his ambitions sitting in the 13-man game.
I think it's maybe slightly harsh. He's not been amazing. He's not setting the world alight, but it's difficult when you've got maybe an outside centre that doesn't often pass the ball that much. And I think that's probably more the issue. The Wallabies midfield last year didn't get the ball to the outside backs at the World Cup last year. That was apparent. And those same flaws are coming into the Waratahs game at the moment, I think. And knowing Nawasi, he had one or two nice runs last week, but they're not using him well enough for an attack. They're not using him in the air as a jumper. And that comes down to what's the play. And obviously, the struggles up front, the fact that they're missing four of their contracted seven props and their two first-choice hookers, by not having a tight five that's going to regularly compete, get you on front football, is having a detrimental impact to the back line. But, you know, pressure's got to be on Tane Edmund. He hasn't had a good couple of weeks. There's been a couple of spilt balls. There's pressure all on this back line, and that extends to Max Jorgensen, who had some nice moments last week, but decided to offload when he probably should have just taken the ball to ground. And every single one of those Waratahs have to look at it themselves if they're going to have a result against the Crusaders 10 years after their Super Rugby title.
Yeah, how do you think Namonga Nitoasi is going to react to this? Like, from what you know of him and his game, like, do you see potentially going into the shell here, or do you see this as maybe the moment that relaunches his last hurrah in Australian rugby?
I think the evidence of what we're seeing is that every time he's had some disappointment, he's come back better. You know, he scored a double on debut against the Crusaders in 2020 when he was a last-minute call-up. He then played a few more games, went missing in action. Similarly, in 2021, got dropped. Defensively, that was one of the big knocks on him. And in 2022, under Darren Coleman, he wasn't even in the top 30-odd players that went on a preseason fixture up to play the Queensland Reds. He was left out. He managed to find his way in and go from strength to strength. So I think that the evidence points to him having a positive reaction, and I'm sure he will. He's a likable character, and he's a guy that plays with confidence, but he's quality. And for the Wallabies to do really well too, I think he is a guy that can still play a role to play in 2024. Just quickly, the Crusaders as well. Ethan Blackadder, he's a massive return for Rob Penny's side. A quality player, really good on the ball, one of the best breakdown exponents in Super Rugby.
He played five games only last season, and he's played 37 games since 2018. That is not much work, is it, due to all those injuries?
Yeah, well, made of glass at the moment, but he's quality, so fingers crossed that he can stay on the park. Mm. If the Waratahs are going to win it, they've got to be able to match them at the scrum or at least not give away the 18 penalties that they gave away at home to the Rebels 2 weeks ago. But they can target the Crusaders' throw. I think their throws are about 73% their line out, which is really bad. And George Bell, really good runner of the ball, much like Billy Pollard, but he can't throw it at the moment. So I'd be going there. Jed Holloway is second on the line out still. So there's a couple of stats for you. I know you're all about your stats, Harps.
Just before that one, Ned Hannigan and Langy Gleeson are also back. And I think Ned's been a real, shining light in a struggling team this season. So, yeah, I just want to make sure they get their flowers as well.
I know you love Ned Hannigan, but he is playing some good rugby as well. It's going to be a New Zealand derby to start things, and this is probably the match of the round to look forward to. The Hurricanes and the Chiefs, two teams in the top four. The Hurricanes undefeated so far, despite the fact that the Blues are ahead of them on points differential. This is going to be a cracking game.
And the Hurricanes are outsiders at $2.02 to the Chiefs $1.80, even though they've yet to lose a game and the Chiefs have dropped two. Obviously affected when DMAC hasn't been in the lineup as well. The Canes have gone for a 6-2 bench split this time in preparation, I guess, for a physical war against the Chiefs. TJ Perenara is back at number nine to start after Cam Royguard's unfortunate injury that's ruled him out. We have Cortez Ratima and DMAC at 9 and 10 for the Chiefs, where Wallace Setiti is named at number eight again after making last outing and doing so well.
Mm. It's going to be an awesome one. It's probably you wouldn't be able to back either team with complete confidence. I will say the Hurricanes, though. I think playing at home, I think that's a big difference. Their backline's been really impressive. You don't lose much by TJ Perenara coming in at halfback, but I like the back row for the Canes. Shields, Iosi, who's been probably the player of the tournament so far. Larkai at overside flanker, but then you've got on the bench to come on guys like Duplessis, Karifi and Devon Flanders. That's a lot of power up front, and the scrum battle will be a big one. And I think the Canes at the moment, their front row's been really impressive. So maybe they just shade them, but yeah, set your alarms for that. 5:05 PM Australian Eastern Daylight Time, Standard Time rather, at Sky Stadium in Wellington.
I've been up for hours by 5:05 PM. Thanks, Christy. I don't need to set my alarm for that one. I'm more a 5 AM kind of guy.
Yeah, if that's a subtle reference to Arsenal, who played this morning in the Champions League and were in a 2-2 draw with Bayern München. All right, the final game this week, Melbourne Rebels against the Highlanders. And this is a real opportunity for the Rebels after back-to-back wins against the Tars and then the draw.
Three-peat.
Yeah.
A three-peat. Yeah.
I don't know if
they're building a dynasty. It's a dynasty, Christy.
They'd be going for three on the trot here. I'm not going to give you that at all. I think that's really poor from you, okay. Harps. But against the Highlanders, and Highlanders, two wins, four defeats. They're on 11 points. They're in eighth spot. The Rebels, fifth spot, four wins, three defeats. This is a great chance for the Rebels to potentially even join the Chiefs should they go down to the Canes. So there's a lot on this one.
Yeah, and Carter Gordon's up against the rookie number 10. I'm pretty sure this guy's not a lock, but an actual number 10, AJ Fallon-Sarger. And they've got two young guys coming off the bench as well. So, as you say, there's opportunities there. The Rebels are missing. The Wallabies have the return of Josh Kemeny and Andrew Callaway. Josh Cannum, as we spoke of earlier, is missing out. Also, Lockie Anderson comes back into that team. So, this is after what has looked like a terrible, terrible season for them that was plummeting out of control, they're starting to turn this around quite nicely.
Well, they've got to win this one because there's some really difficult games ahead of them. They're going to be playing the Crusaders away, the Blues at home, the Reds away, the Chiefs at home, and the Brumbies away. Followed, one of the hardest things that you can do is the Drua at Churchill Park and Latoka. So they always targeted this three-match block. They're 2-2 thus far, Kevin Foote's side. They need to make sure that they're 3-3, and then they'll have five wins. They're targeting a maiden Super Rugby finals berth. So if they were to be able to achieve that, given all the off-field drama that's still occurring, that would be an amazing achievement. The Rebels will feel, the return of Josh Kemeny is a massive one because they've had no breakdown presence really other than Taniela Tupa coming off the bench. Felipe Downegunu at outside centre is always hard on the ball, but that's something that the Rebels will be able to really targeting this week is up against the Highlanders who are always going to get pretty good ball with guys like Billy Harmon in there, Willie in the back row. They've got to match that, and then they might be able to put some pressure on that young 10 for the Highlanders in the absence of Reece Patchell.
It's a short week, but it looks like being a pretty exciting week as well. I can't wait. Friday night, I'm on match report duty while you're at a soiree drinking G&Ts, no doubt, and eating the finest food possible in Sydney's finest suburbs. So I'm looking forward to my Uber Eats pizza and quite a bit of action on Stan Sport. So
I'll one up your. It's actually going to be up towards the Byron Bay region and probably champagne rather than gin and tonic. Mm. But so we'll be back for Saturday's action, and I'm looking forward to that one. But yeah, set your alarms. Make sure you get around it. If you're in Sydney, head to watch that Tars team against the Crusaders. It's a really big one. A lot riding on it, and perhaps the slim possibilities of both sides making the top eight and finals action, which is still a couple of months away. But until then, that's it. I'll be joining Matt Tamua early next week for our usual podcast. But good to see you, Tony Harper. I'm sure you'll get some sleep after some much-needed sleep after your early wake.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I appreciate that. And been an absolute pleasure being rostered back on the pod. Did Nick upset you, or did he keep you going too long, or is it just kind of you like to keep us both guessing in these preview environments?
I've got to show some form of idea of what I'm talking about when by having you on my boss on the podcast. So it's probably more about that, just showing that I am doing some work. But look, hopefully you're enjoying your rapid fire editions. If there's anything you want us to actually talk about, please get in touch through either social media or the very lengthy comment sections at times on our podcast. On our platform, theraw.com.au.
And get on and like and subscribe and follow on your podcast apps of choice. These podcasts do appear in story. I know some people gleam straight over them, but you can find it in story. You can find it on Spotify. You can find it on Apple. You can find it everywhere. All good podcasts are played.
All right. You're putting me to sleep. Yeah. Cheers. Thanks.